So this, first of all, where we're sitting, we can't see very well, but this very beautiful paintings of Krishna's Leela on the ceiling, and also the king's Leela, Bharat for a king. This place, this holy Tirtha, is called Kusum Sarovara. And there's many pastimes here that Krishna has, primarily with the gopis. Radharani and the gopis often come here in the morning at about 10:30 in the morning, and they start picking flowers to make beautiful garlands to bring to Radhakund to offer to Krishna. And occasionally, Krishna comes and he meets Radharani. It's called flower picking disputes. They have arguments about flower picking. And this is simply, their arguments are simply to increase their happiness, because there's lots of joking and lots of challenging. So one day Krishna came here in the morning and he caught Radharani picking flowers. And he says, "Hey, who are you picking flowers from my private garden?" And when Krishna asked, "Who are you?" then Srimati Radharani replied, "Nobody." Just like someone Prabhupada once tells that there's a thief in the house, and then the people are in the house sleeping, they wake up and they say, "Who is that? Is that a thief?" And then the person says, "No, it's not a thief." So there's lots of joking and back and forth, and then finally, then Krishna says, he says to Radharani, he said, first of all, Lalita challenges Krishna, because he said, "This is my flower garden. Who gave you permission to pick flowers from my garden?" Then Lita Sakhi stands in between Radha and Krishna and says, "Who do you think you are? Our Swamini is Vrindavaneshwari. She is the queen of the entire Vrindavan. Every inch of Vrindavan is owned and controlled by her. All these flowers. You never planted any flowers over here. You never planted any trees. In fact, you're running behind the cows and your cows are running hither and thither, and all they're doing is trampling down all the flowers that belong to us. So actually you should get out from here and just leave us alone. Let us do our flower picking." Then Krishna replied, "Oh Lalita, don't you know that actually everything here belongs to me, because I married Brindadevi. Brindadevi is the goddess of all the forests of Vrindavan. And as you know, as soon as a man marries a woman, whatever the property the woman has belongs to the husband. And whatever property the husband has belongs to the wife. So now all of Vrindavan and all the flowers, they also belong to me. Therefore you're picking my flowers. So you stop picking and you get out from here." So then Lalita says, "Really, Shyamju, you married Brindadevi? She's your wife? I don't believe so." And then Krishna says, "No, you can ask her. You ask Brindadevi. I married her. So therefore you're trespassing." And then Lalita says, "All right, we'll ask Brindadevi." And of course she was right there. She said, "Oh Brindadevi, did you marry Krishna? Is he your husband?" And Brindadevi made this terrible face as if she just ate 5 lemons. She went, "Are you kidding me? Me? Marry this black fellow? I said, never in 1,000 lifetimes I would marry such a despicable person." So it goes on like this, back and forth, and there's many, many descriptions. These flower-picking pastimes are very sweet. They're very innocent and too much sweetness and joking. Of course, ultimately, they're only picking the flowers to make garlands for Krishna, not any other purpose. But just to increase the ras, Krishna has this beautiful pastime here. Of course, 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya came here. This structure and palace wasn't here. It was built about approximately 200 years ago. But Lord Chaitanya came. At the time, this lake was called Sumana, sometimes called Kusum. Kusum means very fragrant. It's Hindi for fragrance. Sumana Lake or Kusum Sarovara, because there's so many flowers always making the air very fragrant here. So our Lord Chaitanya visited this place. There was a small lake here, and he also bathed here and absorbed himself in remembering these beautiful pastimes. Probably the most famous pastime that occurred here was the pastime of Krishna serving Radharani. This is a significant point, especially of our Gaudiya Siddhanta, our Gaudiya philosophy, the conception or the idea that Krishna or Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, he serves his devotees. Because when you examine Vaishnavism, or Vaishnav Siddhanta from the viewpoint of Ramanuja Sampradaya, or Nimbak Sampradaya, or Sri Sampradaya, or any other Vaishnav Sampradaya, you don't find this conception, this idea that Bhagavan is massaging the feet of Radharani, he's serving Radharani. In other words, you don't find, do you read any pastimes of Narayan serving Lakshmi? Do you read any pastimes of Ramchandra painting Sita Devi's feet? Have you ever read? You never read, and you never will read. That's good, smart. So this is something to be proud of, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has introduced this highest conception of pure love of Godhead, which is so attractive because there's no inhibition, there's no rules, there's no regulation, there's no distance, there's no formality. And this philosophical point one comes to understand while traveling around Vrindavan and visiting the various Leela Stalis. He can understand that, oh, here, in this place, Krishna's serving the gopis. In this place, Krishna's serving the coward boys. They're defeating him in wrestling. He's carrying them on their shoulders. And they're tired. He's rubbing their legs. They're thirsty. He's digging a well for them. They're hungry. He's killing a demon to shake the fruit trees for them. You follow? You get the idea? Everywhere we go in Braj, what do we hear? We don't hear about all the servants worshipping Narayan or Ram. We hear about Bhagavan worshipping all his servants, his coward boys, his mother, his father, his gopis, everyone. The mothers, the elderly ladies in the village in Vatsalibab, they're praying, oh, I hope Krishna comes to our house and we can see him early in the morning stealing our butter. And he's thinking, he wakes up and he says, oh, Prabhavati Saki, Prabhavati Gopi, oh, she's praying so intensely. I can hear her prayers. I can feel her heartbeat. Oh, I must go to her house first. So then he goes to steal her butter because he wants to give himself to her. Because she wants to see him. She wants to have darshan of him. She wants to see his face as he's sneaking inside, looking this way and that way. So to please his devotees, he goes into their house, he breaches all morality, and he breaks all rules of conduct and morality, and becomes a thief. Becomes a thief to please and satisfy his devotees. Where can you find such a lord? Where can you find such conception? Nowhere, anywhere in Vaikuntha or any Bhur Bhuvaswa, anywhere. Only in Sridham Vrindavan. Vrajabhumi Vrindavan Dalki! So hearing these points of philosophy helps us increase our faith and understanding that we've definitely chosen the right Lord to worship. Because we have this concept of tattva, Vishnu, Ram, Nrisimha, Narayan, Krishna, they're all the same in tattva, but there's an ocean of difference in terms of ras and prema. And this is what makes one satisfied. It's the taste, the sweet taste of love. And the sweetest taste of love is available at the lotus feet of Krishna. So therefore, Krishna is supreme, and he's the supreme personality in these two departments, in these two categories, of ras and prem. Because tattva, simply to go around chewing on tattva, doesn't satisfy the self. But to chew on Prem Ras, or to drink Prem Ras, or to relish Prem Ras, that completely bathes the self. Sarvatma Snapanam. You've heard this phrase? Sarvatma Snapanam Param Vijayate. You heard this? No? Cheto Darpanam Arjuna? So, Sarvatma Snapanam, the Sarva Atma, the complete Atma, the body, the mind, the intelligence, the being, the consciousness. The soul, sarvatma snapanam, becomes bathed, washed, drenched, drowned in this sweet sankirtan of the names of Sri Krishna, Radha Krishna Sankirtan. So this is a great fortune we have, to be under the shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so we can drink deeply from the ocean of rasa by serving Sri Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna. And then our bhakti lata will grow very nicely. One day, Krishna came from Gwalpakur, which is about Gwalpakur means a cowherd boy lake, lake of the cowherd boys, Gwalpakur, which is about 600 meters from here. And all the cowherd boys were resting under the trees there, and the cows were nearby, munching on their grass. And as per Krishna's Nityalila, he wandered away with Subal, Sridhang, and Madhumangal, and he came here. Because oftentimes he meets Kundalata and Brindadevi and other gopis to find out about Radharani. So one day he came here and he met Kundalata and Brindadevi and Dhanishta, Sakhi. And he said, "Oh, is Radharani coming to Radhakund today? Will I be so fortunate to meet her at Radhakund during the Madhyan Kal, midday pastimes?" And then Kundalata said, "Oh, my cousin, brother, I'm very, very sorry. Chatila has locked her in her house and there's no chance she's coming out to play with you today." But Krishna is not so easily fooled. So he told Kundalata, "Oh, that's right, it must be like that. Okay, then you can all return to Barsana and to Yavat. Then I will wander in this forest here by Kusum Sarovara and just bide my time and then enjoy the scenery, enjoy the sweet flowers, the fragrant flowers." And so he bluffed the gopis like that. So then they left. But actually Radharani was waiting in one small kunj on the banks of Kusum Sarovara. So Sridham and Subal, Madhumangal and Krishna were walking together. And Krishna mentioned to Sridham, he said, "Listen, let's pass the time, let's pick some flowers here. Because I want to make, at least I can hope against hope, Ashabanda, that possibly somehow or other I may have the good fortune meeting Radharani. And if I do, if I have that opportunity, then I will offer her a beautiful flower garland. So you carry a flower basket and you walk next to me and I'll start picking flowers." So Krishna started picking flowers from the groves here. And he's picking flowers as children sometimes do, young children. They have a flower. They take one flower like a daisy and they pull off one petal. Some young boy, he may have some, just like 10, 12 years old. And he has some girlfriend. And he says, "She loves me, she loves me not. She loves me, she loves me not." Of course, that's the truth. But there's no love in this material world. Anyway, so now Krishna, he starts picking flowers. And this is actually where it started. Everything starts with Krishna. So instead of a flower petal, he plucked one flower, one Jui flower or Bela flower or some Malati, Madhavi, whatever. Radha loves me, then she loves me not. Radha, because he's thinking, "Oh, she must not love me, she didn't come. But maybe she'll come, she loves me. Maybe she'll come, she loves me. Maybe she won't come, she loves me not." So Krishna and his buddies, gopas, cowherd friends, are picking flowers, and Krishna has absorbed himself while he's engaged in his service of picking flowers and to prepare a garland. He's absorbed himself in his Ishtadev Devata, Srimati Radharani. And of course, this is what we should all do. Whatever service we're doing, there's the external activity of doing a service, and there's the internal activity of mental absorption. And that mental absorption is only possible depending on the degree of purification of the heart. So Krishna picked so many beautiful flowers. And then he said, let's sit down. I want to string a nice garland for Swamini, for Radhika, for my Priyaji. So then Krishna sat down, and he started stringing a beautiful garland, very beautiful garland. And while Krishna was stringing the garland with all the fragrant flowers, then he finished the garland. And when Krishna finished the garland, he told Sridham and Subal and Madhumangal, "Oh, I think your mother's calling you."
Mother's
bosom. Mother, that's a joke. That's the way you say it. My older brother used to tell me when I get you wanted to get me out of the way, your mother's calling. But he'd say, I think the boys from Gwalpakor are calling you. Mm-hmm. You should go check on them to see everything's all right. And I'll finish this garland and I'll meet you in a short time. Mm-hmm. What Krishna realized when he was stringing the flower garland, he realized that the air nearby, or the air he was breathing or smelling, was saturated with the sweet fragrance of Srimati Radharani's transcendental body. But the coward boys could not perceive it because their noses are not trained. Their nose is not trained to perceive that most sweet of all scents. So then while Krishna was stringing the flowers, he said, oh, Radharani is very nearby here. I have to get rid of these boys so that I can meet Radharani, and I will personally offer her this garland. So Krishna held the garland on his right finger. He was draped, was hanging from his right finger like this. And he started following his nose, following the fragrance, and he followed that fragrance exactly to the small kunj. And then he looked and he saw Radharani was sitting there inside like this. And she was very unhappy. And she had, they were all sprinkled around the ground where she was sitting were so many small flowers that fell out of her hair. Because in her distress, she was walking back and forth in the kunj. As she was walking, the flowers were falling out of her hair. And her hair became disarrayed, became loose. So Krishna very quietly, on his tiptoes, without the notice of Radharani, he entered into the kunj and he went behind Radharani and he started brushing her hair, combing her hair. But she was so much lost in thoughts, she was so much absorbed in thoughts of thinking, where is my Krishna? How can I meet him? Why are these gopis always doing this to me? Why are they always making these arrangements so I can't easily meet with Krishna? So she was totally absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, and she didn't know that Krishna noticed that Krishna was brushing her hair, and he retied her beanie. Then he, from the flowers he had collected, he started putting small, beautiful, fragrant white flowers in her hair. Meanwhile, Rupa Manjari came here because she was at Radhakund making arrangements for Radha and Krishna's meeting, and there was some delay. So Sri Rupa Manjari, Rupa Goswami, came here to Kusum Sarovar to find out what was the cause of delay. So then Rupa Manjari started moving here and there, and she couldn't find Krishna or any of the sakis, and suddenly she saw Krishna's footprints in the ground. And she started following Krishna's footprints. And she followed Krishna's footprints, and they went right to the entrance door, the kunj. Rupa Manjari looked inside, and she saw Srimati Radhika absorbed in her internal meditation, her samadhi meditation on Krishna. And behind Radharani was Krishna doing the seva, kesh seva, dressing Radharani's hair, serving his devotee. Seizing the opportunity for seva, Sri Rupa Manjari entered the kunj. She glanced at Krishna. Krishna glanced at Rupa Manjari. And with Krishna's glance, in his glance he was saying, shh, don't say anything. In his glance, his eyes was telling this, Rupa Manjari, don't say anything. Can't you see? Can't you feel? Can't you understand how much pleasure I'm deriving from serving my pure devotee? Krishna is so happy. He wasn't, oh, why do I have to do this service? Why do I have to brush his hair? Why do I have to pick these flowers? Why do they always make me make the garlands? Rupa Manjari looks back at Krishna and says, all right, for some time I'll let you relish. I'll let you relish or enjoy the happiness of serving my Swamini, my Yudheshwari, my Radharani. After a couple of minutes, Rupa Manjari pulled out one mirror, darpan. She pulled out from her pocketbook, or whatever. from one of the couple of Riksha trees. She pulled a mirror, and then she slowly went in front of Radharani. And Radharani's like this. And Rupa Manjari said, "Radhika, look! Radhika, look, look! Dekho, dekho!" So, startled, coming out of her meditation, Radharani opened her eyes, and when she lifted up her head, she saw Rupa Manjari, and then Rupa Manjari said, "Look, look in the mirror!" And Radharani was like waking up from a deep sleep or a deep dream of meditation, absorption in Krishna, and she looked, "Ah, is it? What am I, Rupa Manjari, what am I seeing? I'm seeing Krishna brushing my hair. Is this a dream? Is this a dream? Is this real?" And then Rupa Manjari says, "It's real, it's real." And she can't believe it, because you see something in the mirror, maybe it's illusion, maybe you're still dreaming, you don't know what's happening. So then Radharani turns around. And when she turns around to see, then Krishna, who had hung the garland that he made, he hung on one branch. So he took the flower garland, he put it on Radharani like this, and said, "Yes, it's me." So this lila of Krishna brushing Radharani's hair and serving his beloved devotee is depicted in this right over here. And the next, this is a chhatri or dome, and a small dome over here. You go in there, there's a dome, and then there's a little, like there's one dome, and then as you enter, there's a little thing like this, a small, like arch. Mm-hmm. And in that arch, you'll see a very interesting painting, because it's old. It's painted with all these paints you see. This is not acrylic or oil paints. This is all dirt. This is all dirt and minerals. And like this blue color is, copper sulfate. Mm-hmm. Copper sulfate. You know, copper sulfate makes a blue color, although copper is red. But copper sulfate makes a blue color. So these are all natural. This is 200 years ago. There was no paint companies. So these are all natural colors. That's why they're so lasting. They've been painted. Imagine painting something 200 years ago and it's still there. So if you go over there, there's a painting. You can see an interesting painting of Krishna. You can wander out and come back in during the Harikatha as you choose. But that's depicting this lila. This is the famous lila here. And then this painting is also in this temple out in the corner, which is Danbihari, whatever they call that. I think it's Danbihari Mandir. And that's maintained by our god brother, Bhakti Balava Puri Goswami Maharaj from Scotland. His devotees maintain that. And that painting is being worshipped. A picture of that painting is being worshipped there. So this is the pastime behind this. So across, in this direction, not very far, maybe a 5-minute walk, on the other side of the street, is a place called Narad Kund. This is a place where Narada Muni performed austerities. What had happened is that Narada Muni desired to have darshan of Radha and Krishna's rasa dance. So he understood, because he knows so much Tattva Siddhanta, that in order to do that, you have to have gopi rup, the form of a gopi. So he was trying to find out how can he get the form of a gopi. So he traveled here and there, and everyone was giving him suggestions. "Why don't you go see Lord Shiva? Lord Shiva has written so many beautiful songs to Radharani, and songs and poems glorifying Radha and Krishna. Maybe he can give you some clue, some idea, how you can attain the form of a gopi to fulfill your aspiration to have darshan of Radha and Krishna's Rasa-lila." Lord Shiva said, "This is very difficult, but I'll take you. You come with me." So Lord Shiva took Narad Muni by the hand, and he brought him from Kailash here across the street to a very dark and lonely and dense forest. And he said, "You sit here and do austerities, and maybe by the blessings of Brajadam, and by the power of your austerities, you may attract the attention of Krishna." Narada Muni was performing austerities in Brajadam for thousands of years. And then it just so happened that it was the time for Krishna's Prakat Lila, manifest pastimes. And one day, Purnamasi, who was personification of Yoga Maya, she was wandering over here in this forest. And she saw this rishi engaged in very difficult austerities. And she inquired, "O Rishi Maharaj, who are you? What are you doing?" He said, "I am Narad Muni. I have an aspiration or a sankalp to attain the form of a gopi, to see the rasa dance." So she said, "All right, you come with me." So she took Narada Muni here to Kusum Sarovara. And she said, "You go here in the corner, in this southeast corner, and you bathe. You take a bath here." So Narada Muni bathed here in Kusum Sarovara, and went inside the water. And when he came out, he was not Narada Muni anymore. He was Naradi Gopi. So now that he had the suitable form, Narada Muni was taken by Yogamaya to Vamshivat, to the Rasastali, or the Rasmandala. And then he was introduced to everyone, and Krishna accepted, "All right, Narada, you can sit here and observe our rasa dance." So after observing the rasa dance and fulfilling his desire, then Yogamaya brought Narada Muni back here into the west side of Kusum Sarovar and dunked him in the water when he came out, and then he restored his form as Narada Muni. And then Purnamasi said, "Why don't you stay here? Why don't you stay here in this Naradavan and write a beautiful book? You should write some book about your experiences, and in a summary way, you should write your understanding of bhakti. Now that you've lived in Braj, now you became a gopi, now you saw the rasa dance, now you write something of your realizations." And so he sat in Naradavan after having all these wonderful experiences, and he wrote a famous book. It's called Narada Bhakti Sutra. Sutra means very condensed summary of his realizations on devotion. And our Gurudev, he wrote many commentaries on these verses, and BBT has published this book. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we see in the first canto the story of Narada Muni. And we find there that Narada Muni is described as a Sudrani. He's a Sudra. He's born as the son of a Sudra. Now this is an interesting point because his father is Brahma. So Brahma is a Brahmin, not a Sudra. So how does the Brahmin become a Sudra? So there's a story in, I think it's Garga Samhita, what we just found, about how did Narada Muni become a Sudra. This is a very good story. One should hear it very tightly or very attentively, especially if that listener happens to be a brahmachari and or a sankirtan book distributor. One day, all stories start this way. One day Narada Muni met his father, Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma sat him down and he said, "Listen, boy, listen, son. Stop wandering around uselessly on traveling sankirtan. You should follow my order and beget or produce many children to help me fill up the universe." Being an avid philosopher, Narada Muni responded to his father in a philosophical way. He said, "Father, creating children causes grief and bewilderment, as any father will know. Rather, I will create devotion for Krishna, Hari Bhakti, and I will glorify Krishna by singing his glories." So then Lord Brahma became angry. And he cursed Narada, "You fool! You like singing so much, then become a Gandharva for 4 million years. Then Narada Muni became a demigod, Gandharva, and his name was Upabarhana. One day, this Gandharva, Upabarhana, came to visit Lord Brahma. And he was singing for the pleasure of Lord Brahma. However, his mind was distracted with thoughts of a woman. So then he started to sing the song in the wrong rhythm. Again, Lord Brahma cursed him. You become a Shudra.
Well, that's how he became a Shudra.
But later, he again appeared as Lord Brahma's son. And at this time, Narada Muni was visiting the celestial city named Vedanagar. But when he entered that city, he saw that all the women and men were deformed. Some of the men and women had no feet, some had no legs, and some had no necks. Narada Muni saw this astounding sight. He said, "Why are you all deformed?" And they answered, "We are the personified ragas," which means melodies of music. "But we became deformed because Lord Brahma's son, Narada, sings the wrong melodies at the wrong times with the wrong rhythms. And because of Narada's faulty singing, all the ragas and raganis have become deformed, and all their limbs have become deformed." There are numerous times during Srila Prabhupada's preaching campaign in this world when some disciple was leading Mangal Arati with the wrong morning tune. And Prabhupada would say, "Stop! Stop singing! Sing the morning tune. Samsara Dava." He went off into some, he was singing some blues and rhythm and blues tune or some kind of rock and roll samsara prayer. Prabhupada says, "Stop, sing the right tune." So even this is coming from there. So then Narada wasn't revealing who he was. He was duly embarrassed because they were speaking about him. So then he asked them a very general question. He said, "Well, suppose, for my own edification, suppose someone doesn't really know the ragas. How could a person learn the proper ragas? So if you tell me, then I can, of course, spread the news to others." So then the personified ragas, they said, "You must go to Vaikuntha and learn the correct ragas from Divya Saraswati." Divya Saraswati is the wife of Lord Narayan. Narada Muni went to one mountaintop and he performed austerities for 100 celestial years in order to attract or attain the mercy of Goddess Saraswati. Finally, he got the darshan of Goddess Saraswati, Divya Saraswati, and she taught music to Narada Muni, and she gave him his celebrated veena, which is known as Devadatta. So by the mercy of Saraswati, Narada Muni became the best of musicians. So, of course, this whole van, this whole forest here is called Shamvan or Shamkuti. It's a very dark and dense place with many, many trees, so it's a very ideal place to meet, for Krishna to meet the gopis and have confidential pastimes. One day in spring, during the Phagun Purnima, which we call Gaur Purnim, but there was no Gaur yet in those days. So the Purnima was called Holy Purnima, or Phagun Purnima. So Krishna and Balaram, they decided to convene a rasa dance here with both of their gopis. Krishna has his gopis, and Balaram has his gopis. So there was a combination of an evening holy festival, throwing colors at night under the full moon. Because oftentimes we do some activity in the daytime, then we think, "I wonder what it's like to do in the nighttime. I wonder what it's like to do under the full moon." We may do the same activity in the daytime under the sunshine. Then we think, "What's it like to do this activity under the moonlight? What is the effect? What is the ambience? What is the feeling?" So of course, holi is usually played in the daytime, throwing colors and pitchkari, shooting liquids on each other. So Krishna thought, "Well, it's pretty warm this season." Believe it or not. But so they came at night and they were throwing colors, and then it was followed by a rasa dance. So all the gopikas assembled here with Balaram and Krishna. But before they began their rasa dance here at Govardhan, at Ratna Vedi, Ratna means jewel and Vedi means platform. So the gopis, they sat Radharani on a beautiful asan, and they offered her this arati, this gopi, it's called Radha Arati. And they were worshipping her. And meanwhile, one very, very powerful and ferocious yaksha, and his name was Shankachud. Shankachud, that's what they say in India. They say Shankachud. We say Shankachuda, but they say Shankachud. He just by chance was wandering by this way. And then he heard, as he wandered by, he heard all these girls making this sound, like they do, like in Bengal, you must have heard. It's called Uludwani, the sound of Ulu. It sounds like Ulu, and they call it Uludwani. Well, Shankachud became very attracted. He heard the high-pitched, beautiful singing of the gopis and this Uludwani and their bracelets and ankle bells. He said, oh, sounds like a bunch of girls in the forest. And it's 12 o'clock at night. Sounds interesting. So Garga Samhita provides some interesting details about the nature and size of Shankachud, which we'll read. Shankachud was a very powerful yaksha. Yaksha means like they're beings. They're actually very subtle beings. They're worshippers of Kubera and assistants of Kubera, and they have mystic powers. They can become invisible or visible, and they can move underground or they can go through walls. They have all kinds of mystic powers, yakshas. There was no one on earth equal to Shankachud in club fighting. Once he had a duel, he had a fight with King Kansa. We say Kansa. King Kansa. For 27 days, finally, King Kansa threw Shankachud 800 miles in the sky. Shankachud fell on the ground and he felt slightly disturbed. Then, Shankachud threw Kansa 110,000 kilometers in the sky. They kept fighting and no one was winning. So then Garga Muni came and he proclaimed, Shankachuda and Kamsa are equal in strength. So after that fight, Kamsa and Shankachuda became very best of friends. If you can't beat them, join them. That was the fight. Now let's hear about the form of Shankachuda. He was 700 feet tall. He was totally black in color. Although in the Bhagavatam pictures, they show him to be like Russian color. Dun 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 dun. He had a tiger's face. I guess it means ferocious, fierce, because tiger is definitely someone you don't want to kiss. When Shankachud glanced through the branches of the trees, he saw all these beautiful gopis. And then he said, huh? Acha? Then he saw this little boy that was human-like. Human, he wasn't 700 feet tall. He was like 5 feet, 11, 6 feet, like this. This is Krishna's size. He said, what? Who is this guy? Who is this weakling? Who is this weakling? He's black like me. I'm also black. He's 5, 6 feet tall. I'm 700 feet tall. I can just... and they'll knock him out. So then he jumped on the scene. He grabbed a big log, as you know in the Krishna book. And he started making these noises. And Radharani was there in the asan with other gopis. And then he said, hey, come on, jao, jao. And then he started chasing. And the gopis cried out, oh, Ram, Ram, Krishna, Krishna, Ram, Ram, Krishna, Krishna. Bhutal, Bhutal, save us, save us. So Shankachud started driving. He was driving the gopis off to the north towards Radhakund. And Krishna said, oh, listen, Balaram, Dalji, you stay here and you guard all the other gopis, or maybe some other Rakshash, some other demon along with this person. So you stay here and guard the gopis. I'll take care of this nothing. Seeing Krishna in hot pursuit of himself, then Shankachuda, he dropped the tree he was carrying and he forgot about the gopis and he started running for his life. And within an instant, Krishna caught him and boom! Knocked him up, hit him in the head and killed him. So he had some jewel, this Shankachuda. Chuda means head actually, Chuda, Shankar Chuda. So he had some jewel that was shaped like, was in the shape of a conch shell. It later became the known as the Shamantaka jewel. The Shankar Chuda, the crest, they say crest jewel, because it, Chuda means head, or the Chuda Karana. It means his top knot. He had some jewel, sometimes they say in his turban, but it was actually in part of his headdress. It was shaped like a conch shell. So Krishna took that, and he thought, oh, what a beautiful prize to give to Radharani. Because usually, it's interesting, because usually when you do something, when you save someone's life, or you protect someone, then they give you a prize. Oh, you saved them, or you were a great hero in the war. You were a great war hero, so here's a purple heart, here's an award, here's a gold medal. So now Krishna saved the gopis, so they should give him a reward. But instead, Krishna thought, oh, look, here's something to give to Radharani. Because I know that ladies, they always like nice jewelry and things. So what's good about this demon? Is there anything good about this demon? Because we say, Chanakapanda says, even you can take gold from a filthy place or find the essence. There's something good about everyone. Right? Try to find the good in everyone. Try to find the good. So Krishna looked up and down 700 feet. From bottom to 700 feet. Wow. There's nothing good about this person. Oh, there's one good thing. It's a jewel on the top of his head. I'll take that and offer it to Radharani. So that's what preaching is all about. Preaching is all about that. No matter who we preach to, no matter whom we preach to, we try to find that one gem-like quality. We try to, even they may have so many bad qualities, lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, intoxication, junkai, madai. We don't care. If they have any faith, that gem, that jewel of Shraddha, Shraddha Ratna, if they have just one good quality, one drop of faith in the holy name or in Krishna or in God, then we will take that and offer it to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and preach to that person and give them love of God. Sri Krishna Bhagavan Ki. So this pastime took place here at a place called Ratnavedi, and there's a beautiful kund there, a lake there called Ratnakund, that we were hoping that we could hold our venue there, but Indra had a different plan. So now Krishna has this beautiful jewel to offer to his beloved that he retrieved, or he, say, won spoils of war from killing the demon, Shankachud. So anything, whenever you get something wonderful or valuable or meaningful, you want to give it. This is bhakti. If you have something valuable or meaningful or wonderful, you want to offer to Krishna, or you want to offer to your superior. So Krishna's superior is Radharani. His guru, his everything is Radharani. So he says, oh, I want to offer this to Radharani. But there's only one problem. There are thousands of gopis, and there's only one gem. If I give this gem to Radharani, then all the other sakis will become what? Thank you. They will become envious. Well, Krishna is very clever. He had to think, how can I accomplish my wish or fulfill my desire? Ah, my other superior in terms of age is my elder brother, Dauji, Baladev. And if I give it to him, then all the sakis will think, oh yes, that's quite correct. None of the gopis will be envious. Oh, he gave it to his elder brother. See how much affection and love and respect he has for his elder brother. Oh, that's Krishna's very good boy. So Balaram, of course, being the Sevamurti, he's the Sevamurti, he's the Sevak Bhagavan. He's absorbed in the service and pleasure of his younger brother. He happily received that gift of that Shankachuda crest jewel from Krishna. But because he's absorbed in the mood of serving Krishna, his mind, Balaram's mind and heart, are one with the mind and heart of Krishna. So he knew what the abhilash, he knew what Krishna's abhilash was. So he said, oh yes, thank you very much, Krishna. Then in a very secret and hidden way, later at Gwalpakur, Balaram said, hey Madhumangal, take this jewel. And he gave it later to Madhumangal. Then knowing the destiny of that jewel, Madhumangal later, the next day, he gave it to Dhanishtasakhi. Then in private, Dhanishtasakhi, when Radharani came one morning to cook Krishna's breakfast, Dhanishtasakhi went into Radharani's private bedroom in Nandagram. She said, Radharani, guess what? I have a special gift for you from Krishna. You recognize this? Oh, that's Shankachuta crest jewel. It's for me. Yes. Narottam Das Thakur Mahashaya is telling us in Prem Bhakti Chandrika, if a sadhak or practitioner, if he attains by the mercy of Guru, Sri Nam Prabhu and Bhakti Devi or the personification of service, by their mercy, if he attains some very sweet and confidential realization or some special mercy directly from the Lord, he will keep that very, very confidential, very, very secret. He won't go to everyone in the marketplace and say, oh, Bhakta Igor. Bhakta Igor, do you know last night I had a dream? And in my dream, Radharani came to me and she took me by the hand. And we walked around the forest at Radhakund. Then she sat me down and she whispered a mantra in my ear. And when I woke up, I remembered that mantra. And I started chanting that mantra. And that mantra revealed my gopi sarup. And now I'm a gopi. Do I look like it? I'm 120 kilo gopi. So Srimati Radharani, she felt that I have received a very, very, very special gift, which is an expression or token of Krishna's intense affection and singular love for me alone. He has given me this jewel and favored me among all the other gopikas. So I am not propelled by false ego. I'm not trying to advertise. I'm not trying to get a following. I'm not trying to collect people around me. So I'm not going to hang this gem outside of my dress so everyone can see it. See, look. Everyone will say, oh, you got the gem? Krishna gave it to you? How did you get it? No. This gem is blue, dark blue in color. That's why it's called Shamantaka. Antaka means forehead. Antak. And Sham, because Chuda means up here. So the jewel is up here. Antak. Antak means forehead. This is forehead. So the jewel is like crest jewel or somewhere up here. So Shamantaka. Antaka. And Sham means blue, like a rain cloud. So this gem is blue like my beloved, like my Nagar, like my Krishna. So, and this is a very confidential secret reward and gift I receive from Krishna. I'm going to hide it. This is rahasya, secret, bhajan rahasya. I'm going to wear it around my neck forever, 24 hours a day. And I'm going to tuck it inside. Under all my clothes, I'm going to tuck this gem and I'm going to keep it resting right on my heart. This blue gem will rest right on my breast, right above my heart, because that is where I want Krishna to always be resting, right on my heart. So I am seeing this Shankachuta crest jewel as the personification of Krishna's love, attachment, and mercy for me. So I'm going to see this gem. This is non-different from Krishna. I'm going to hug this gem on my chest and keep it there forever. I'm not going to show it to anyone, especially the gopis. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he explains that the vanquishing of this demon represents three obstacles to pure devotion. It represents fame, or Shankachuta represents fame, sense gratification, and women. He says that by killing Shankachuta, it represents the destruction of the desire for name and fame and the desire for attaining sense gratification through bhakti. Very interesting. So sometimes, or many times, devotees are actually enjoying their senses in the name of devotion. And the last one, which is quite obvious by the context of the pastime, is that destruction or killing of Shankachuta represents destroying the desire to associate with women. So the conclusion is that if we have desires, if we have, which we all have, which are, these material desires are impediments or obstacles, or what are called anarthas, to pure devotion or braj bhakti. We have these anarthas, desire for name and fame, desire to get sense gratification even through bhakti. Like when we weren't a devotee, we like to gorge ourselves on food before we were devotee. Now we become a devotee, we still have the desire to gorge ourselves, but now we gorge ourselves on prasadam. Mm-hmm. That's not honoring prasadam, that's sense gratification. Mm-hmm. So the desire to get sense gratification through bhakti, which is called tarangarangani also, tarangarangani, or desire to for name and fame, or desire to have illicit relation with woman, or to enjoy woman, this is all, of course, maya. So by reading this chapter from the 10th canto, which is, what chapter, it's not mentioned here. It's in 10th canto, the killing of Shankachuta, and praying to the Lord, as he killed this demon, please kill and destroy and remove all these anarthas from my heart that are represented by this demon. And by the mercy of this Lila Katha, and by mercy of Bhagavatam, and Shukadeva Goswami, Vyas, and Bhagavan Sri Krishna, coming through Gurudev, these anarthas will be removed from the heart. This is the presentation of Bhaktivinoda Thakur.